Welcome to Thinking Reimagined.
Thinking Reimagined is a unique platform for thoughts-provoking intergenerational dialogue
in a diverse and inclusive setting with a focus on impactful change
in the global workplace and community.
Our stakeholders' conversations aim to spark thought,
leadership,
curiosity,
engagement,
collaboration, and learning
amongst individuals, teams, and beyond.
Enjoy this episode. And subscribe to Thinking Reimagined on Apple Podcasts, Google Play, Spotify, and other outlets. Welcome to another episode of Thinking Reimagined. We're very excited to be here because we're trying something new today. We're hoping that we'll have more guests join us on Zoom. So before we get started, thank you to the panel today. And thank you to all of you who are joining us during this live stream on LinkedIn, YouTube, and of course, Facebook. Today's topic is rising above the bias, opening the channels of trade, export, and investment. I don't think anyone is a stranger to this topic because we all know if you're in the business field, if you're in the ecosystems of trade and commerce and investment, that there's an inequality for women and of course youth, of course, in many areas. So I'm really excited to have the wonderful panel today, and of course my co-host as always, Nifemi Oguntoye. We are and strongly believe that having a global mindset makes the change that we need in a global society, and we always strive to have diverse, inclusive conversations that are intergenerational. And I think it is reflected today in the panel. Nifemi, it's been quite an ordeal trying to get online today, hasn't it? How are you?
It happens. You know, they say it's a life situation. Anything and everything can go wrong. Good morning, everyone.
Thank you so much, Doctor. And thank you. Nice meeting the team. Nice meeting Noreen, nice meeting the online banker. I heard a little about you, and I'm happy to be here this morning. My name is Ife Hussein. I am the president and CEO of the Women in Export, Trade and Investment. I do a lot of other things, by the way, but hey, this is a passion, and I think I'm following Dr.'s stripes. And what we try to do is we looked at the country, at what is happening in the continent last year, towards the end of last year. And by the way, I've worked with women organization for a couple of years now. I think this should be my fifth year. And but I decided to look into a niche area, given what's happening in the country and the desire for the country to turn into non-export of non-crude products. And for a country whose agricultural sector is the highest employer of labor, and in that number of labor population in the sector, it is said that women represent about 75%. Of the population in that sector. So we decided, you know what, if we're looking for an area where we can actually impact this nation as women, particularly with the focus on export, then we should try our hands and push into export. And I'm happy to meet Noreen. I am sure we will do a lot more after this meeting. And so basically that's what we are in about. That's me. And I'm sure we'll have another opportunity to talk a bit more about the women in export, trade and investment.
You know, I am so glad that you started the conversation by talking about women in export and trade. And of course, we've got the financial guru who does some amazing things online through the online banker. But, you know, the focus today is on how do we rise above the biases, because that is what is limiting women in terms of being able to access the instruments that they need whether it's the opportunities, whether it's the financing, whether it's having mentors that will help them break into this very lucrative form of business, you know, whether as entrepreneurs or actually working within enterprises. We know that women are heavily involved in the economic participation, but we also know that there's discrimination, and of course there's the affinity bias, which continues to limit women's participation. 70% of MSMEs are run by women. At the same time, when you look at the funding instruments that are available, I don't even have the figures for the African continent, but we know that in the US and in the UK, the numbers are dismal. In the UK, it's 2%. Sorry, is it even up to 2%? I don't think so. I think it's slightly less than 2%. In the US, it's at 2%. And then if you break it further down in terms of access for the men, you find that it's about 87% for the US and 85% for the UK. And then if you break it further down and you start looking at mixed foundership, in other words, a male and a female, and we all know as women in this field that if you put the form through and there's a man attached to it because of the affinity bias, it certainly will go through because of that man, and is usually tied to the male as opposed to the woman who may be the founder. So I really think that today's discussion could be quite robust, because we're talking about how do we break these barriers and how do we open up the field more for women to be able to participate? Because we know that if women participate, the economy will increase almost threefold, if not even more than that. But they need to have that access. So where do we start? Do we start with you, Noreen? Because we just heard from Ife. And I think Nifemi is back. Are you back, Nifemi?
Yes, I am. Can you hear me now?
Yes, we can. So Noreen, please go ahead.
Thank you, Dr. Irma. And let me just add, Efe, I've already sent you a link and we need to be talking very much so, especially on the Commonwealth Business Women's Sector, which obviously I used to be part of, and there's such a strong affinity there. It's interesting, Dr. Irma, in terms of what you said, the affinity investment, because this is something in the UK, as you said, we have experience also in the US, and it's more so interesting because we have much more different races coming through. So you don't just have the women and the men, you also have the different races that start coming through in terms of the bias. And you've got bias, which is conscious bias, you've got the subconscious bias, and then there's also the bias, which is built into the infrastructure, which is, makes it even harder to surpass, because that needs a fundamental change in terms of rebuilding up. So whether it is a physical structure or actually education that will take us into rising above the bias, it is something that we need to recognize, measure, and I'm a great believer of, if something isn't measured, then we cannot move it or change it, and then start making strides towards building the structure that we want to actually work. So what I would actually like to throw open to the table for a conversation is, how can we measure it? How is our data in terms of collecting this? Because we talk about bias, and when you start having these conversations, a lot of the people will say, oh, but women are there, they are working, can you not see them, you know, and they try to kill the argument, or else, yes, we know we have a problem. And a lot of governments will not move unless you present them with evidence in numbers and data to back that up. Dr. Irma, you were mentioning the percentages in the UK and in the US. We've started pushing to try to get data in hand, because ourselves weren't actually even sure what data we're looking at. I mean, just looking at women in trade internationally, we don't even have the full number of how many MSMEs and SMEs actually trade internationally, and I'm talking about the UK. So I wouldn't even dare to put figures in on African countries in terms of how many women are actually trading. I know that they're probably small, but there's a lot of trade that happens, the informal trade as well as the formal trade. So we need to consider that informal to bring it into formal, because otherwise the bias will always still exist, because they will be out of the system, out of the policies, and out of the structure. Let's open the conversation.
You really raised a few very important factors, and I know that Stanley and I had a conversation the other day regarding data, you know, because I love data, and Nigeria, Africa as a whole, we're not it's not a data collecting culture, but there's a need for it. And if I can just deviate for a moment, because I know Stanley will remember this conversation, you know, we're talking about unemployment. And we both know, and all of us know, what the unemployment rate is in Nigeria, just to give an example. And then a new document came out and said, well, the unemployment that was at 41 point something percent, which we believe is actually closer to 50%, was suddenly at 4.1%. Of course, that affects everything for the population. And of course, those that would be most affected would be the youth and the women. And I also like the fact that you brought up the informal, because the informal sector is very heavy on the African continent. You know, if it's not the informal sector that's bringing in the revenue, it's the remittances that come from the diaspora that keep it in orbit. So I would like to get Stanley's take on this, because he likes figures and he recognizes how this goes, don't you, Stanley?
Yeah, I do, and thanks Noreen for bringing this perspective, and thanks Ife. It's good to have Ife. I would like her to speak just after me, because I would like to just throw up some things. One of the things that she mentioned was that we don't have that data, and that data is supposed to be collected by bodies. So it's there are levels to this. When you're working, you report to someone. When you go up to, so we're talking trade, and we're talking trade across the world, across the continent. And there are agencies that handle this. There are people that come to file for them to make these exports and all. There are people that work there. And then for funding, there are banks. So I work in the bank, and I know like there's the financial aspect to every trade that goes by. You must pass through a bank. There must be a form of financial commitment. And these data are collected. When they are collected, how are they cascaded down? How are they sought out? You mentioned something about bias. Every bias is handled by humans. It's dictated by humans. We are the ones that create the bias. Men over time have been the ones that have supported families back in the days. And, you know, they knew them to be the sole winners. No matter what the impute of women were as at then. But now that is changing. But is that reflective in the data that we have? Is that reflective in the agencies that we have? And I'd like Ife to speak on this. We have so many commissions in Nigeria. The Nigerian Exports Promotion. I'm using Nigeria now as a case study for the rest of Africa. We have Nigerian Export Promotion Council. We have the Nexim Bank, we have the Association of Commerce, Mines and Agriculture, and we have a whole lot, even the Nigerian Ports Authority, Shippers Council. All of them come together because, you know, they handle a part of trade or they are affiliated to something in Nigeria. What is the accuracy of the data that they have? Because once you are not giving out those correct numbers, it affects everything. Like Noreen said, if you go to the government agencies now and you go and tell them, we are trying to push for women, we are trying to push for more women to be included in having access to low funding, government intervention funding at this percentage. And they ask you, oh, how many women do you know that are exporting agricultural products? Those numbers, when given, are they accurate? How accurate are they? How are they gathered? And how are they separated? Separated from the men that are fronting themselves and the women that are putting in the work. So I would like to speak on that as to, you know, what are the challenges that she has seen working practically with women on the field.
Thank you so much, Nifemi. So when I stepped
actually,
into
that's
the-
Stanley.
Oh, that's Stanley. Oh, okay. Sorry, take your name off my head now. Okay. So when I joined this field, the very first thing I realized was I was in a program, a conference, and some guy from NAPC was given a speech, and he mentioned that Nigeria had, at the time, Nigeria had about, on record, 3,200 exporters. So that's what they have on record, as in registered exporters. And in another conference that I was in, I think the MD of the World Bank actually mentioned how smaller countries, far smaller countries, have exporters in the hundreds, or if not tens of thousands. exporters' record. So first, that is an issue, because if you go to NACO airport where export is done today, you will even see physically more than 3,000 people on ground doing all sorts of things, moving all sorts of things. I wonder if anybody had taken the pains to go to NACO to do like a registration. There are certain times you want some field information. You don't wait for books. You go on the field and you get this information. I was told by my colleagues the first day I went into NACO. NACO is the luggage handling section of the airport, airport for export. Where I got there, my colleague told me, you see, look at all this you're saying. More than 50% of this is an official, they are all unofficial exporters. And I'm like, why? We have the bank here, we have NEPC here, we have NAFTA, we have most of the agencies are here. Why wouldn't these be recorded? She said, because they're not recorded anywhere. Nobody takes the information. People buy, people sell, exchange is going on within countries and nobody is concerned about where these exchanges go through. Stanley mentioned that he works in the bank. The banks have a lot of our data. What have they done? Have they been able to diversify this data? To bring out this, if we're looking into a sector, right now we're talking about export sector, have they been able to go into their data and say, okay, these guys are exporters, they receive this amount, they receive that amount. I wonder if NAPC2 have worked with the bank, you know, with the banks to get this data from them. On our part as women, when we started, one of the things I tried to do was to get data quickly. And I met a lot of bottlenecks in that, because women, again, are not on their own. They're not used to. If you send a survey, you're sure to get just like 30% response, right? So you need to send, you need to encourage, you need to talk, you need to, you know, inspire to get full responses, to get some sizable responses. And that was what we had to do. Now, in WETI as an organization, Women in Export Trade and Investment, we have, I can tell you that we have about 170 registered women that are either interested in export or are export ready. And then we have an open population group of about 1,200 members, and these are women. So we tried when we started to put that check in place, because I'm aware about the data issue. And we try to put that check in place so that as people come, we can then have our data. And in case we go to any institution, like Stanley mentioned, we go to the bank to speak with the bank. We were at Nexen Bank the other day and we told them what they had. And they were quite surprised that we had the kind of structure we had. They were quite surprised. It came to them as a surprise. And I get to say that every stakeholder that we have sat in meetings with, when we talk about the kind of structure we have in place, they are really surprised how we are able to build that kind of structure. Maybe because I had a background in the finance sector, and I know that I'd had this conversation with women organizations before I took on that baton. And I know that data is a problem. Data is a challenge. Even though data is a very good resource. Like Stanley said, if you go to an institution today and you say, we need help this way, they would ask you, it will almost be a default question. How many members do you have? What do you do? What structure do you have? And most times I found that the women organization probably needs to be taught more to focus on this and really give it a priority. Because it's something that, like, for instance, in Nigeria, we have the Coalition of Women Association, ANWBN. ANWBN, if ANWBN as a coalition of 76 registered women organizations can give their data, they should have a membership not less than 4 million women in Nigeria alone. So I remembered when I met them, I was still at the bank then, I tried to help them reach out to partners, stakeholders that could help us build that database. But we didn't make a lot of progress there. And I know that we're still on that path right now with ANWBN, still trying to secure the data. okay? But then if we drill it down to the various organizations, and honestly, Dr. Amen, I think we can do this together. If we drill it down to the various women organizations and see that, okay, you guys need to have your data. We need to know for sure if you say you have 20, that you have 20. If you say you have 100, you have 100. If you say you have 2 million, because I'm aware one of them have nothing less than 2 million membership. If you say you have 2 million, then we should have some form of data to say, yes, these are the 2 million members. We need to take it seriously. You know, so I think there's a lot of work to be done in that regard. And I'm not sure how to continue, but there is a lot of work to do. There is. Thank you, Doctor.
Yeah, you know, you just raised a question, and I am curious, you know, because they say that women, you know, the data says that maybe about 33% of the exporters are women. So you're saying that it's actually much higher than that, or you believe it is much higher than the 33?
Yeah. Yes. And then because a lot of women do the informal export thing, for all of the reasons you can think of. First of all, again, I got into the space and I met that there was something called NXP. And by the time I started asking about the details of what NXP is, it was a scare. No woman wanted to register because at that point they realized that they told that your money, your inflow coming, you can't touch it. You either can just recycle the money. And so the joy of doing business is gone and nobody wants to do that. So that's immediately threw people off registering. Okay, but I hope that now that things are a bit different, we could take advantage of the NXP registration for our businesses. But yes, a lot of women export activities are not recorded.
Is it possible, I'm just throwing this question out to everyone, is it possible that the ease of doing business can make it very challenging for women to get into these fields?
True. I think I can speak on that. So in the ease of doing business, there are hurdles to it. And you know, Nigeria being the kind of society that we are, very patriarchal, and the way that it's set up, it's easier for me as a man to go into an office and, you know, in the right terms, let me use the Nigerian context, I meet one guy and say, I beg, this one, I know if you do, I can't do this part. Like, please, how do we do it? But women have come to realize that women are more due process driven. I think it's almost by nature. So they always try to, you know, go through the past. Like, that's why in the banks, you see that women repay their loans way better down here in Nigeria. So the percentage of women repaying their loans are better than men, because women tend to see, okay, these are the T's and the I's and that we need to cross and all. So men tend to know, and women don't want all that hassle. They just want to do their business and get it over with. Get my money, I've exported my goods, I've gotten my goods, I've exported, and that's it. I don't want all the trouble. But by the time you now start to bring all these complexities in, and you know, the bureaucracies that are in it, it tends to make a lot of people shy away from it. And then they front the men, because one of the things I've realized is that women are actually involved. They are there in the background. But because of all this, they then front the men. And those are the data, that's the data that is captured. So I still do believe, yes, that the ease of doing business affects it.
I'm going to come in now, if I can, Dr. Amma, because there's a number of points I want to pick up on. FA, it's interesting hearing about the numbers and the way you're set up. And I can actually say that, oh, it is similarly beginning to actually expand very quickly across Africa. I mean, at the moment we are in Kenya, Nigeria, Zimbabwe, South Africa, Ghana, Uganda, Eswatini, and we've got, and Ivory Coast has just come on, and we've got Rwanda coming up, Niger. So we're expanding, and obviously between us and what you're doing, I think we are providing a good supporting network for many women to come forward to join, because there are associations, there are organizations, you want to be part of something that is actually globally going to open the door to more trade, that is actually going to put you in front of buyers, and that actually can facilitate potentially being recognized enough as a number so that, Stanley, as you were saying, I can go to a bank and say I'm certified, I'm a women-owned business, I am here requesting finance. I also know that WeConnect is also quite strong across Africa. That's the certification organization. I am a WeConnect certified business. You can see my women-owned behind me. And this actually encourages women to come forward to say that they're women-owned so that they can be, they can access more opportunities that the larger corporations, the larger member buyers are providing specifically for women through the RFDs that they actually open up, the RFPs, and through other learning opportunities that they provide, upskilling, and all the rest that goes along with it. So that's one thing I wanted to actually put forward. The other point, Stanley, if I can pick up on it, which is the bias that we ourselves are probably inputting on ourselves as women. So this has come even from research here in the UK, US, and also across Europe. We know that sometimes women lack confidence, and unless we've got 100% everything ticked, we do not put ourselves forward to ask for funding. And a lot of women-owned businesses tend to be self-funded. We put ourselves on the line, we put our house on the line, and we're not putting them on the line until we actually are ready to say yes, until we're ready that the business can take off, which therefore puts us at an immediate disadvantage in terms of immediacy to market, so getting ourselves to actually go and launch the business, the ease of doing business, because in a way we make it more difficult for ourselves. But the system itself is, and that's something you mentioned earlier, Dr. Ama, the affinity bias that comes through. We know when we present ourselves in front of investors, in front of banks, if I am there as a woman and I don't have any males in my team, they're going to look at me and they're going to go, oh, it's going to take ages until we start getting our return back. And I'd rather have somebody within 3 years I can exit and get a return than somebody who's in it for a lifestyle business. And therefore, I'm stuck there because the business will not be giving me the return I expect in the time I expect. There have been exercises done where they've taken that bias out of the equation. We've had people put themselves forward for research and they got the funds, even though the business was fronted by a woman. So it is bias, and that's something that needs to be knocked out of the investment arena, and especially banking, which also comes up about it. I mean, they put so many more points as to women. We've had them even here in the UK where women have had their business closed because it's considered risky for no other reason than they are women and they're slightly working within a risky area, which would be digital. And because they consider digital to be high risk, therefore the points are against them and they close that business or they take the loans away. So this bias is existing across. It isn't just only endemic in Africa. And maybe in Africa it's more pronounced because of the fact that so many women are in the informal area, as we're saying, Dr. Ama. So they don't tend to fit into the standardization that a lot of the institutions like the banks and the investors look for to be able to give them financing. So those are a couple of things that we need to definitely push to have an improvement in so that we can start eliminating the bias. Standards, professional standards, and actually looking at fitting into what is expected, because a lot of times they come forward and they say, but you know, we haven't given us the information you want. We wanted a 10-page deck. You've given us a half an hour and we don't even know what the business is fully going to look like in 10 years' time. Maybe it comes through from better organization. There are business advisors who can do this, loads of them across Africa, because I know I've met them. I've been talking about how can we upskill, how can we push towards it. And this for me is all part of that equation that pushes towards elimination of bias, because we have a fixed idea in our mind and it's difficult to push against it. And I go back to the only way we can truly push against that is getting the data in hand, proving there are successful businesses that have actually grown even without the financing that comes through from the official channel, Stanley, like you were saying, or the investors. They have self-invested, they've gone through co-ops, they've gone through the microfinancing. Fair enough, they haven't grown as fast as they could. They've grown organically because unfortunately the distribution is also missing in this equation, and that is distribution across Africa. We know it's hard to do trade across Africa because of all the challenges faced at the borders. The systems themselves aren't making it easy enough for us to be able to push, and also the nature of the businesses. A lot of them are agri. They're based on agriculture, agri products. Have we finished them enough to a standard high enough that we can export across the world and get them into supply chains? Can we actually provide an ongoing supply chain in terms of volume to be able to hit the numbers that are required, or will we remain maybe a Pan-Africa or a localized business? So there's a lot of things in that equation that needs to be looked at, probably challenged and rearranged, and then we can push towards that. Sorry, I think once you've opened the kind of world in terms of talking, we can go on forever. I'm passing it back to Dr. Arma.
Oh no, listen, I'm so glad that you brought up all of those points, and you know, everyone here knows that I am a co-founder with Africa Sustainable Trade. And for us, the key point is increasing trade within the continent, intercontinental trade. There's a lot of trade that occurs within countries, but to expand that and opening it up will make it even a richer opportunity for women. But I think women need to stop staying in the background. There has to be a conscious there's a consciousness, you know, a change in mindset, a change in how we look at risk taking to come forth and take that risk. Why take the risk with a man when you can just come forward and say, well, I'm going to take the risk for myself? There are cultural biases, don't get me wrong, I'm not oblivious to those, but getting past those cultural biases, having mentors and sponsors is very critical for advancing women in trade and export, and also in the investment field, is absolutely critical. The numbers need to improve overall. I mean, we talk about inequality, gender inequality, and also the gender disparity economically, that needs to change as well. But organizations also need to think about making it more attractive for women to come and get those loans, to, you know, to tap into the official avenues or instruments that are available for financing. That will be fantastic. And transparency, I mean, I think Ife really highlighted that there isn't enough transparency, there isn't enough accountability. You know, we've already talked about the ease of doing business and the awareness of the biases and the discrimination. We haven't talked about the discrimination, we talked about biases, but there is discrimination in the policies that are put out there. You know, there are areas where the women still need to bring a man to come and sign a document. Come on, why? Why? And let's be honest, women have always been breadwinners, more so now. I know there's some men who don't want to hear it, but women have always been breadwinners. Women have always taken care of the children, the household, all of that. That's an added responsibility for women on all levels. And I think we should also think about the imposter syndrome. More women suffer from imposter syndrome, and that affects them when they put forth in front of investors in terms of going to the bank. Am I completing this correctly? Men don't think about that. A man is quick to look at, oh, these are the requirements. Well, I've only got 5 or 6. Well, I tell you what, I'll explain it when I get there. Women want to tick all 10 boxes before they actually tender things. You don't need to tick all 10 boxes. Tick 6, tick 7. Take the risk like the men. Go up there and talk and speak for yourself. So visibility is also very important. We need to increase the visibility of women within these fields.
This is the Thinking Reimagined podcast, sponsored by Allied Empowerment. Allied Empowerment Consultancy offers leadership and innovation through bespoke human development solutions, brain-based leadership, and coaching. Allied Empowerment empowers business leaders, teams, and individuals to intentionally accentuate desired outcomes built on trust, curiosity, psychological safety, engagement, and communication. Allied Empowerment, thriving in a sustainable and value manner.
I see Stanley's eager to say something. Yes, Stanley, go ahead.
No, I wanted to ask Ife, it's good that you're here. And you know, in the type of export, and when you come down to the trade that happens across the continent and you know around the world, you know, when you the type, if you mentioned that in the agriculture is one of the highest employers of labor in Nigeria and across Africa. And you notice that women within the value chain, women tend to, you know, fall off as the value chain increases, as the value chain rises. And then when it gets to the most complex, you see them, you know, just like you mentioned, the biases, you know, leaving some of those roles to men. And then it comes down, when that still comes down to the type of export. So if we're talking exports and imports, if you check the composition of what is being exported from the country, the type of materials, the goods that are exported from the country, you notice that some of them are, some products are women dominated. Well, some are men dominated. And, you know, when you now still come down to some of them, then in funding, you notice that the men get most of the funding for their own sector. So it's cuts across. It's cuts across. Well, thank God for technology. Thank God for empowerment. We're seeing a lot more play within those two fields where people are coming out. There's no. They're breaking the glass ceiling. They're breaking the barriers. They're not saying, oh, this one is for a man or this one is for a woman, and they are going into that. But for the composition of the goods that are exported from Nigeria, I wanted Efe to speak to that. If you could speak to that, where are you seeing the women dominate in Nigeria from what you've seen?
So for me, a lot of things came across. I prepared myself. I knew I was going to make a lot of revelation, discoveries. And for me, one of the things I quickly noticed also was the fact that when it comes to exporting of commodities, raw materials, women take the back seat. They want to be the ones to, I think the highest they want to do is aggregate. And then work with the farmers, and then the farmers being women, and then they just want to aggregate, and then sit in their quiet corners and look for who wants to buy it and do the export for them. And, you know, a lot of women I actually noticed were losing out and are still losing out because they do all the hard work. And some man just come from somewhere because he's more eloquent, he's out there, he goes out easily, he can be listened to, you know, and he comes and just prizes it and takes it out and then does the export. Now, when I started what we're doing, I said, okay, first of all, let's go along with products, value-added products, okay? Because I found that was easy for the women. That was their space. They could easily turn the onions into grounded onions, turn the crayfish into grounded crayfish, and they want to quickly package. They do all the nice packaging. Men don't have time for that. Men don't, you know? And then they now want, and that is why, I dare to say that is why we do not have a lot of our products out there. When I say product now, value-added product, because it is a space that the men really do not have time for. They want to do the big, quick export of the commodity that has been aggregated. Going into value export, it means they have to think about the quality, the standard, the expectations of the client, meet all of the regulatory requirements, get their FDA and all of those things that they need to do. They have to go through all those, like Kingsley noted, no man wants to do that. So, hey, quickly, they just go to the commodity side. That is one of the reasons why we do not have a lot of export of value-added products. So I quickly noticed that, and now one of the major things we're focusing is to get the women certified for export. So we train them, we get them, okay, what are you already doing? Can we see, okay, we can't do this, you can't source from the market. You need to be able to trace your source, the source of your raw materials. Nobody told them, they didn't know this. They just wanted to produce nice product that they used to cook at home. And they knew it was easy to produce, so they processed it in their kitchen. And nobody told them, no, you're going into the world. You need to be sure of how you're processing this. Even if you want to use your kitchen, we have to segregate the portion. Export was like one big, giant activity that it was a no-no. So they were doing little things and they were hiding themselves because they didn't want to be caught by the regulators. And then the ease of doing business in Nigeria also played its own game on them, because then the regulators come and they are winch hunting.
oh, why are you doing it like this? You are not certified, you are not qualified, bam. And that's it, the business is gone. Nobody is thinking, but she's trying to do something. Why not correct us? Why not work with us to do it right? Why just shut me down? You know, so it's not an easy conversation, but we need to start from somewhere. And I'm so glad again to meet Doctor and to meet Noreen. And I believe that together we can pull some strings and really kick off some stuff. I mean, in the next, by this time next year, we should be able to have some data that we have worked on. What, Noreen, what do you think? We should have some data.
I think so. I've been actually, in the meantime, busily WhatsApping our president in Africa and telling him how many numbers we have, where are they, what are they into? And just to see, and I think the first thing would be to start actually looking at numbers and looking at the standards and looking at ways we can actually upskill. And one important thing you said, and it's so true, it is that value add. It is the actual getting into the full supply chain. And until women are prepared to come out of the kitchens and actually start saying, yes, we are actually women exporters. And Dr. Rama, yes, it is that imposter syndrome. I am not just a little housewife feeding the little street. I have a business and I will own it. And I think that is a bit of a mental block. So it has to be pushed across. And it affects a lot of mesmes. I'm not saying it's something that only exists there. It exists in a lot of places. And they say, oh, I just want to make a little bit enough of money to look after my family. Once you've started doing that and you have a business, if you don't do that, somebody else is going to do it for you and you become part of his supply chain. So either you need to see how we can get women to own the supply chain vertically and move it across. And it's not for everybody, as you're saying. Maybe you can do that last bit end part, which is the aggregation, and look for distributors and actually take them out, whereas others are happier to be producing. But in a matter of transparency, in a manner of actually upskilling and knowing exactly how they can make the most of their resources to actually get the best return, I think there's a lot of education that needs to be done and needs to be done across. And digital helps us. We have digital now. I mean, and especially coming on the back of, you know, the trade agreement, the recently signed trade agreement, I know that, you know, this year we're putting digital through our governments, and WTO is looking more towards getting digital to be across. It is not just, I know a lot of people look at digital and think like, oh, that is going to be an impediment, it's a barrier, I'm not ready for it. It will help. It provides that that audit trail that we need. It makes it easier for us to fill in the paperwork. It makes it easier to be there rather than having to physically go and get the work. But on the other hand, we also need the governments to work with us, make it easier for small mesmes to trade. Why are we putting so many barriers in terms of the declarations and the paperwork and the bureaucracy? And, you know, it's a lot of it that's just built in for the sake of it sometimes. And do you need to be actually stopping business that's growing? Can you not have a startup policy or startup programs to start pushing them before they scale up? Why are you killing the business at the startup stage? I think these are a lot of questions that probably a lot of governments haven't really answered. And if they had to sit down and examine, they will push trade quite across.
Well, you bring up a very good point. And actually, whilst you were speaking, it crossed my mind that whilst we're thinking about trade and export in the traditional sense of it, you know, a product, value-added product, we also have to think about that digital services, because that's becoming a very key commodity. And that's a space in which women can thrive, because then again, you're not necessarily needing somebody else to help you market or sell that. You can do it yourself. And it's a field that's generally dominated by women. So I think that's something else to look into and to begin to put into perspective, that we're looking at trade and export in the more linear, traditional way. But technology has changed tremendously. And when you look at the African continent, the population is so young that you can see the robustness of that population and using that platform to engage with them, but also for them to be able to be earners and part of the financial ecosystem that's available. And at that point in time, of course, you need to have the quality so that you can compete with those who have always been in that space, but you're not necessarily having to look to someone to judge your product, because you can do that and that is easily accessible on a global platform, which is what we want women to be, on a global platform trading. Yes, yes, Stanley, honestly, the online banker.
So you've spoken to my demography, and I wanted to just jump into that. And thanks for bringing that. So if we could do the numbers, the combined amount that, so when we talk exports, it's not just, like you mentioned, it's not just agricultural products. It's not just, it's not petroleum, it's not raw materials. So people are exporting skills now. And that is, people are exporting skills, they're exporting talent. A combined revenue that the African artists in the music industry have taken across African continent into Europe and America and to the rest of the world is greater than what some countries earn as revenue from their exports. From smaller countries, it's greater. So if you were to check the ticketing sales across the continent for the, I'm talking of music alone, I'm not talking of movies, is greater than the amounts that some countries are earning from their top exports, their top exports from their country. And that still comes down to what you mentioned, which is digital. What digital has done for the young people is that it is permissionless. You don't need permission. I don't need somebody to validate what I'm doing. For example, I work online. I have a platform. I don't need somebody to come. I need to explain things the way that I can explain it. I only need a smartphone, a ring light, a camera, and a microphone. And if somebody in America can appreciate my talent for what it is, I don't need an export council board. I don't need the Exim Bank. I don't need NAFDAC registration number. I don't need any government agency to validate me. I just need to put out my product. And once it's appreciated, I can get an export value for my talent across the world using the digital platform. And that is where the young people are excelling, because there's a lot of barrier as you grow older and as you need to interact with the government. But once you can have your own space, once you can have that talent, and that is where women too are excelling, because once you can have those things that, you don't need, because like you mentioned, women like to tick all the boxes. It's something I have realized, it's something I have noticed working over years. But all you need to do is that you are in your space and you've ticked all the boxes for yourself, and that is why you're on camera. And they are doing amazing things. And that is why increasingly we're going to see more young people, because the demography of Africa falls within the young population. We're going to see more talent. We're going to see more exports and people creating new things in the ways that we didn't think of it, because it's permissionless. And that permissionless avenue, which the media is giving and the internet is giving, is something that is going to add a lot of revenue to the African continent, and especially Nigeria, from what you're saying. So I wanted to just jump into that.
Well, I'm so glad you said that, because it's about curiosity, creativity, innovation, removing the biases and the discrimination that exists, opening up the channels for communication, ease of doing business, collecting data. Have I left any? Oh, yes, of course. Mentorship and sponsorship. You know, when women rise up, take another woman with you, so that it really helps to change. And young people, as you go up there, pull somebody else up with you. So mentorship and sponsorship is very important. Transparency, we've talked about transparency and accountability, everyone being accountable for what it is, and recognizing that the space of trade and export has changed dramatically. So, and we've talked about education and training as being very vital and upskilling. So what will be your message to women in trade, young people? I'm not going to leave the youth out, because this is a young continent where we are right now, we're speaking of, although this is a global conversation. And it's youth all over the world, to be honest with you. It's not restricted to just youth on the African continent. Youth all over the world, women, we're all experiencing these things. And I started off by sharing data from the US and the UK, because that's what's available right now. But what do we do to eliminate these biases, this discrimination, to uplift ourselves, to go beyond? What would you say?
Well, if I take it from there, I use my experience and probably again because of my background, one of the things I did with the Women in Export Trade and Investment was to get a guy involved. And not just a guy or a man, but a young man. And not just a young man, but someone that was into the digital space. So we got him on board with us as an executive, so he could help us with, you know, connect the dot. I try to avoid the mindset of, oh, this is a women's group. No, I don't agree. I tell people this is an organization. We are a limited liability company. Even though because of our spread, we are currently on a WhatsApp group and on social media platforms, please do not think that we are social media. No, we are a limited liability company. So what we have are groups on the social media, those are departments. I don't have to have bricks and mortar to have an organization run today. And so I try to really imbibe that into those into the women to let them know that no matter what you're doing, if you have a company, your business registered and your team meets online, please know that that is your business organization. That's your office space. It is not a WhatsApp group. So there are certain things we do not allow in our group. It's not open for conversation and internet posts. It's not open. It's a no-no. We are very official with what we do. And then we have this expert, a professional in his own right, a growth strategist that is working with us to ensure that we don't lose the focus of what an organization has to be, what a company, limited liability, corporate company has to be, and then go into being social and impact driven. You know, so we have that help. And for me, it also helps me to keep my focus on the age range of our women. So a lot of our women in some certain ages above 50 have experience. They have experience in doing these things that we're doing, but they couldn't take it further because, you know, as time unfolds, a lot of things, the economy is changing, the environment is changing. You need to bring in fresh ideas that would enable you work in synergy with the young people. And so that helps me also keep my focus with, hey, working with the young people. How do they think? What are we supposed to do? What is our website supposed to look like to our external clients, stakeholders, and partners? Do we have a correct website? Is our website social website, or is sending the messages, telling the people that this is a company to be identified with? And then we talked about digital. We need to, every women organization, every youth out there, you're going into business, you cannot do it without digital. You can't. In our today's world, I mean, when we started our cooperative, we have a cooperative. When we started, one of the things we had to discuss real deep was, so how do we get people to have their tellers? You know, in cooperative, you have your teller, the cooperative have their physical teller, they sign, and everybody keeps this bulk paper somewhere. And I said, look, we are spread across the country. We even have members in other African countries. So how do we keep tellers? And we said, you know what? We're going to have e-tellers. And that's just the beginning because we're going to go digital. We're going to have a platform where you can actually go do your credit and get your e-teller immediately. And you can log on to your profile and see your payments and see what you have paid, if you have collected a loan, how much loan you have collected. If you have applied for a facility or a loan, what was it, where it is at? We're going to have all of those flow digitalized. We're also going to have our e-commerce portal where you can see what the women are doing, what they're trading, what commodity we have, what product we have, whether it's in stock or whether it's out of stock. All of these things are things that we must do if we want to get to the space or to the stage that we really need to get to in the nearest possible future. You know, so that's what I would say, Doctor. I hope I tried there.
Well, we really appreciate your insights. I just very quickly want to share with you a message here. Say support the small and medium enterprises, create programs and initiatives to help SMEs. participate in international trade, providing them with the necessary resources and information to enter the global markets, access to finance, ensure that businesses, especially SMEs, have access to affordable finance and options to support their export and investment activities. As we know, finance and funding, especially in Nigeria, is almost impossible. And I do want to emphasize intergenerational workspaces, intergenerational work. If I mentioned it, it's absolutely critical. People are not retiring as they used to, you know, at 60, you were supposed to clear out and go off and do something else with your life, which was basically nothing for some people, or travel. I don't know if I should say this, but I say there should be more people, like myself, stay on a bit longer, continue to contribute, learn from the young ones, and innovate. This is where the innovation comes in. It will make you stay alive, healthy, live a longer life, change your mindset, which is very important. But more importantly, you're contributing to the growth of others. You're sharing knowledge, and that is absolutely important. And you should learn every day. We should be lifelong learners and contributors to the economy, to our community, to our society, and the global world. Nifemi, is there something you want to say as we get ready to wrap up? Because you've been very silent today. Are you in your car? I think he is.
Oh, yes, I am now. So who else has noticed how naturally this conversation has moved with so much spontaneity without having to ask as many questions? I think that's what happens when you bring three women together to discuss womany.
Don't forget there's a man here, Stanley, and yourself, and Peter was around. It was balanced.
All right, so I just have an observation, and I just want to throw it in because I have to leave now. It's the fact that, you know, we've been talking about the issue of, for years, we've been talking about how women can rise above the stereotypes and various views of expertise. And I like the fact that this conversation began with acknowledging that we do not have enough data. And sometimes when we have this conversation, we must also acknowledge that it's possible that we're bringing our bias to bear, you know, on how we view the reality or what our worldview is. I would like to think personally that in the past few decades, we've seen more women leaders, you know, emerge in politics and business and what have you, more than we've been able to achieve for many years. And I understand that we are all Oliver Twist and we want more, but it's also important that we take a break to celebrate what we've been able to achieve. You look at this panel, for instance, and they were talking about women in export and investment. That's a big deal. And I appreciate that in the past 1 hour thereabout, we've been able to share what the problems are. But most importantly, we've also been able to, you know, bring in some solutions based on our experiences and the successes we've been able to achieve in our different fields. So I'm hoping that younger women out there who probably are listening right now or will be listening to this podcast in the future will be inspired by what Noreen, you know, what Dr. Ama and what Ife have been able to do. And as much as you're seeing so much problems, I'm seeing what we've been able to achieve. You know, the fact that it's not as bad as it used to be.
I think we've lost Nifemi. Stanley, did you want to respond to that? Have some concluding comments and then we'll go around.
I thinking that's what Nifemi was just going to, but we should celebrate some of the achievement that we've had. I think that's what he was trying to point out, that, you know, it's a lot of inclusion that women have had in the past few years and are still getting, and it's something that should be celebrated. And then for our young people, because, you know, as the women come along, they still draw younger people in fold. And when we speak younger people, male, female, and there's a lot that the younger people can do, because as they transform, they're not coming up with the old mindset. They are more educated. They don't have the mindset that, you know, that existed, that had created some of the barriers that were in place. And as we have technology now, and I'm an advocate of using technology. I'm an advocate of using the platforms that are available, you know, to do as much as we can. It will help in data. Technology naturally will help you get data, just use it. You already have the data. You don't even need to, you know, the number of people that are on this platform right now, you don't even need to go and count them. It gives you the number. So technology will help with that. And in, and the inclusion that we're looking at, I feel like the younger people embracing technology and not limiting themselves to, you know, to the spaces, you know, be taking yourself out there. For the women, not just limiting yourself to, you know, checking all the boxes and limiting yourself, putting like a barrier, putting like a glass ceiling to, for yourself and going all out there. I feel like it's the future holds great promise. And, you know, I'll be excited. I'm excited to be part of it.
Thank you. Noreen, your final comments, insights?
Thanks, Dr. Abba. A lot has already been said, to be honest. I think if I was a young woman today in Africa, I would want to think that the world is my oyster and nothing can keep me back. I think it is coming from within. It is a confidence matter. You can push against the system, and our younger emerging demographics are more resilient than we think. They use technology to their advantage. They're already doing it in ways we may find we have to change our own mindsets to get used to it. As Efe was saying, having younger people on the board, getting that mindset in, they are the next generation, they are the next buyers. So let them develop the systems they want. So I would say, stay innovative, stay learning, never give up, and just make sure that whatever you do is to the highest standard you can, and that you are fitting to a global standard, because if you don't, then you will remain small and local. And just continue pushing forward.
Well, thank you for that. Ife, would you like to say in closing? I think you might be muted. Yes, you are.
Much for this opportunity. I look forward to us having this conversation again in some nearest future, and be able to say between when we had the last conversation and now, this is the data we now have, or this is the data we can see coming up, and these are some of the things, stripes that we can now talk about. And like Eni Femi said, yes, the women have really achieved a lot. The fact that we are even having this conversation shows that we have done a lot, and we are going forward. We're looking at the what next, you know, to take it higher. And I like to encourage every woman out there, work, do your work that you're doing, but hey, set your standard for the globe. Do not let your standard be a local standard. Let it be a global standard. I would share this quickly. I remember when I was going to send snails to a friend in the US for the first time. I mean, these are snails, and this is to my friend. I made sure I used a new pot. I used a new burner. I made sure nobody came into the kitchen while I was processing. I even used a new microwave. I did. I used a new microwave to dry the snail. I didn't want anything. I wanted it to just be global. I had this thing in my head, you know, like Stanley said, I wanted to check all the boxes to be sure that everything I was doing was really perfect. And then I bought new bags, I bought new tapes, I bought, everything I used was new, because I wanted it to be that, you know, top-notch and, you know, global. And it was just a simple thing, but I wanted it to be that global when it arrived. And I think that's how we should think when we're doing our trades, particularly, not just global, but even when you're doing your local trade, you should think with a mindset that you want to give the next person the best that can come from you. Let your trade be associated with your personality, and let it give you a good brand. Let someone see your brand or your trade or your business and say, this looks good. And I think we should feel good about that. Thank you so much, Doctor.
Well, thank you very much, everyone. You know, I've listened to the input, and I have to acknowledge this. Yes, there have been improvements for women. Women have made strides. And I celebrate that, but the reality is it should be much more than we see. And sure, I do not want to sit in the avenue of tokenism. We need to go much further. The growth opportunities, the economic growth opportunities on it globally, whether it's on the continent, an African continent, I'm actually going global right now. The global opportunities for women are immense. in whatever sector they go into, but particularly when you look at export and trade and the investment. And we must recognize it, and we must open those avenues. We must make it easier for women and youth, because very often we forget that youth have ideas, and those ideas are the ones that change how we live and how we communicate with each other and how we move forward in the business field. And we have to recognize it and make that our calling card. It has been an incredible conversation. Thank you so much for the input. Let's continue to educate and open the doors. Let's not allow the cultural and religious biases that come into place for women, all of us women, and even the men, if they wish to admit it. At the end of the day, no matter how much we achieve in the workforce, in the global space, there are expectations of how we should comport ourselves as women in our homes and in society. We don't put those expectations on men. Men do not put them on women. We should be free to thrive, just like men are thriving in all aspects of life. Thank you very much for being here. Thank you so much. And if we're all going to come back again, should we say in about 3 to 6 months and see if we have some more to share?
Stanley, would you join us?
I'm available. Don't worry, you can always reach me. Thank you.
Absolutely. And I can't wait to see what Stanley is going to have up in the next few weeks in terms of his educational financial pieces that he puts out there. Thank you so much, Stanley, for joining us, and have a fantastic day. Thank you, everyone.
Thank you.
Bye-bye. This has been a Thinking Reimagined podcast.
The executive producer is Dr. Amma. Co-producer, Peter Ammon Boyle.
The podcast is edited by Nelken, and it is moderated by Nifemi Oguntoyin.
Thinking Reimagined emphasizes the importance of transformational conversations, which have as their aim the bringing about of the rich diversity of thoughts and, most importantly, powerful and applicable effective solutions and change.
The views, opinions, and contributions of the panelists are exclusively theirs and do not reflect the opinions of Thinking Reimagined producers or personnel. Thank you for listening,
and we hope you have enjoyed this episode.
We invite you to subscribe to Thinking Reimagined on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Play, and other outlets.
We look forward to presenting another riveting episode next week.
Thinking Reimagined Podcasts is produced by Live Abundantly.
We welcome your thoughts and invite you to visit our website, livesabundantly.com.
Or you can follow us on social media on Live Abundantly 8.
Thinking Reimagined, changing the mindset for a better global society.